Live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, it's time to go deep on the two-tone blue with former Titans wideout Nate Washington and ESPN Titans reporter Teron Davenport. It's Nate and TD on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN. 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Yes. It's time to get it popping, y'all. That's right. The introduction of the Nate and TD show. As you could tell, the energy is there. I'm excited about this. Nate, I know you are. What's good, my brother?
Hey, it's time, TD, man. I think there's something we kind of both been picking each other's brains about, you know, for the last couple months now, man. And it's time, man. It's our time. I think the people ready, and I think we got what the people going to want, man.
Hey, you got to give them what they want, that's for sure. Before we even start the show, though, I got to say, my guy, man, happy birthday, man. This is definitely a beautiful birthday present.
Oh, man, definitely. When Ryan first spoke to me, to be honest, man, and he said he wanted to start this Friday, I was like, oh, my God, that's my Friday, my birthday, man. But, you know, what a better way, what a better gift, you know, what a better birthday to have, celebrating and starting a new journey with you, man, and ESPN giving me the opportunity to speak on the platform. I think this is going to be an amazing journey. I think this season is going to be great. I love your energy, man, and I'm just excited about the opportunity, and what better day to start it on than August 28th, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. So, you know, not to be Debbie Downer, you know what I mean, but we have to go over what's going on in this world today, right? And you look at what the Titans did on Thursday. They decided to cancel practice. Man, shout out to all of those guys, man. Kevin Byard, right. Ryan Tannehill speaking. You're going to hear from Tannehill in a moment. And even Coach Vrabel. And I think what it really comes down to is guys being able to sit down and talk and develop empathy, right? And be able to bounce things off of each other and have someone else get an understanding of what it's like to walk in another person's shoes. For you, I mean, correct. You've been in these locker rooms, right? You've been in an NFL locker room. When you correct. See this happening, right, the practice being canceled, how do you receive that?
Well, I think it's important. You know, I was telling an ex-coach of mine that's working in college now, head coach in college, and he kind of was calling me and picking my brain about some ideas. And I was telling him, you know, the times have changed. There was once a time where things like this or systemic racism or oppression has been going on for so long, but there was a time where people could actually live and coincide with it, meaning they could either address it or not address it. You know, they can go on their lives, they can go do whatever it is that they feel that they needed to do it throughout the day, and they can cross paths with it as they see fit. But in these recent times, in this last month, in this last year, it's been a situation where you cannot run from this conversation. It has to be addressed. It has to be understood. You know, being in that NFL locker room, not only do we all come from different diversities and nationalities, but we come from different backgrounds, different situations. And a lot of these things that guys go through in the locker room are being secluded and being able to live their own separate life. But it's a brotherhood. And when you see your brothers are hurting, when you see your brothers are going through something that you wouldn't really understand unless you talk to them, the conversation is needed. There is no more coinciding with this conversation. There is no more ignoring the fact that these things are going on and we continue to endure these things as a community. And I think it's fine time that the conversation has been held to cross paths with people that can help, people that can understand us more, people that can point us in the direction of finding a solution, because it's been going on far too long. And I think that the conversations in the locker room will be nothing but healthy, because that locker room is always a family environment. It's always guys that want the best for each other, always guys that want their brother to succeed. You know, I still call and check on a lot of not only my teammates, but their children and their wives and their, you know, their mothers and fathers that I have met along the way. Mm-hmm. And that's just what type of family orientation it is in our locker room. So I know that there's no more coinciding with this conversation. It has to be addressed, and I'm very proud of the guys for addressing it the way that they did on Thursday and having the inner locker room conversation to help each other out, to maybe find a solution on things that they can do in order to give back to the community and address the situation.
And when you say having a conversation and trying to develop understanding from something that you typically can't understand, that leads me right to Ryan Tannehill. And I'm going to say this, right? As we were standing right there outside of the bubble, right, trying to figure out, you know, who we want to talk, right, as far as the players, I, without hesitation, said Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, this is a guy, and you're going to hear why. And this is a guy that through his conversations and dealings with Kenny Stills when they were in Miami, his eyes were open. He's done all of the research. He's read multiple books. And if anyone is a beautiful example of how you develop empathy and how you try to get understanding, it's Ryan Tannehill. Listen to what he said right here. It's a short clip, but it's powerful. Check it out.
We're tired of seeing black men and women die in situations where they should be walking home and spend the night with their families. It's sickening, and there's really, it's sickening to just know that they have to worry about their kids coming home at night. I have two young kids that, because of the color of their skin, I never have to worry about if they get pulled over by a police officer, if they're going to make it out of that interaction alive. And that's a sick fact of the world that we're living in.
Now, when you hear him speak about that, you could tell it's authentic. You hear the man get choked up. You hear his voice crack. You could tell it's authentic. And just to double down on that, and this is the leadership that you have in the Titans locker room, or even just organization, period. Mike Vrabel, I asked him about that. He has two sons, Carter and Tyler. And I asked him about just having to put himself in those shoes as far as having to have a conversation with them. And one of the things that he said that just it stuck out more than everything else in the whole day as far as what we heard from the Titans. And he said that Jonathan Joseph got in front of the team and he spoke about how his son wanted tinted windows on his car. Tinted windows. Right. Something real simple. Jonathan Joseph said, no, you can't have it. Because he was concerned for his safety. Mike Vrabel said, I looked at when Tyler and Carter asked me for that, and I didn't even think twice about it. These are two different worlds that we live in. And I know people aren't going to want to hear that. And I've already had people respond to me on Twitter when I posted that. And I don't usually use the block button, but I used it on them. But what you have to understand is, and I know you having, you made some money in this league. So I know you had the opportunity, if you wanted to get one of those cars, you could get one of those cars. But I'm sure you had to think, like, is this attention that I really want to bring to myself that could lead to X, Y, or Z?
I totally agree, TD. This situation, and I want to address, you know, just Ryan's leadership has been amazing for me since he stepped behind center. I think, you know, in a situation where he even took over from Marcus, in that situation, to be placed in that mode, it's a lot to handle. But not only has he been a great leader for this team, but he has addressed this community as it should be. And he's showing them that he has a heart. He's showing that locker room that he will be the leader that hears everybody's cries, not just, you know, the receivers or the running backs. Like, he is addressing this team as he should. And I'm proud of these guys. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. This is just a situation, you know, that we encounter a lot of times because they can't understand, because they don't go through these issues. They don't have the issue, the everyday issue of being a black person, black man, black woman. And I don't think there should be an issue with that, but I also think it shouldn't be ignored. You know, I think it's understood, because I genuinely feel like, you know, it may not be as detrimental, but I'm sure there's a lot of things that they may, the other races may encounter that I may not understand, because I don't encounter those things on an everyday basis. I get it. I'm not going to be ignorant to it. I'm not going to be negligent to it. You know, I would definitely hear them out, but it bothers me, as you said, you know, you speak on these things in a platform and you may want to say something about it on social media, and it bothers me when people tell me, how to feel as a 37-year-old black man in these shoes. And I've been the only one in these shoes, you know. I make no excuses about, you know, what we put ourselves through, but a lot of the things that we go through should not have to go through. And I'm very proud that these guys are pulling together in this time. This is a time that they must pull together and have one message. And the message is obvious and it's clear. Enough is enough. You know, we want justice for social injustice. And it's time that we find a solution to get to that.
And to be clear, neither one of us are saying that all police officers are bad. Neither one of us is. In fact, I will tell you this. One of the most influential people as far as me and football was a police officer. My wide receiver coach in high school was a police officer. And he would always
rebuttal you one better.
There you go.
TD, and let you know, hey, my father is a retired police officer.
Hey, it doesn't get any more impactful than that.
Exactly, man. I think, and that's just a conversation that people don't understand. You know, it goes hand in hand. We're not against all police, as you said. A lot of these officers, especially in our community, save lives, not just because they, you know, stop a fight or anything like that, but because, you know, in my experience, a lot of the officers, you know, especially African-American officers in my community, like as you were leading into it, but your coach, they will pull us to the side and be our mentors and make sure they're speaking life and positivity into us. You know, so these guys were our mentors, as you said.
And people always say, okay, well, guys took a stand. They didn't practice. What's next? For me, one of the things that I think is very important is to have people who come from within the community police the community. And I think that jobs like police officers need to be looked upon as jobs like, you know, owning a business, jobs like being a doctor, jobs like, you know, being a professional athlete. It needs to be viewed from that same point just to be able to go back and help your community. So I'm really hoping that throughout these different, you know, areas, you know, that are being, you know, suffering from, you know, bad interactions with the police, I'm hoping that that's something that they could say, you know what, I got to change. And I think that's a way that they could change that by being a part of that change, literally by becoming a police officer.
I definitely agree with that. I definitely feel that the solution is within, you know, within our communities, within the police, you know, union, and trying to find a solution to gather ground with them, you know, because we cannot allow the situation to get worse. You know, division is obviously there, but it's never too late to bring unity. And I think it's just going to take a conscious conversation on both sides to listen and understand where both sides are coming from. You know, I can only imagine, you know, how it feels, honestly, right now to be an African-American officer going home, because a lot of those guys still stay in the communities that are suffering, you know, and to be a guy going home like that right now and knowing that your occupation is not only going to have you in detriment of your environment, but just being in your skin alone is going to have you in more trouble. It's a lot, you know.
Definitely.
It's a lot to deal with, and I'm praying for everybody, and I'm definitely hoping that we can find a solution soon.
And before we go to a break, I'm gonna end it on this, and I think Chris Sanders, when he was on here on Thursday, he said it the best. He spoke about that change being from within. So if you're someone out there that doesn't want to become a police officer, that's fine. But change from within. Find it in your heart. Yes. It's free. It's free to be nice to someone else. It's free. So let's find it in our heart. At least one time a day, do something that's really nice for somebody else. Hold the door when they walk in. Say hello. Allow someone to go in front of you and like something. But collectively, these things, as in football, the little things add up to big things. Collectively, these little things can add up to a big thing, and that's change.
Definitely.
That's it. We'll be right back. We're going to get into football, I promise. But we had to get that off of our chest and had to address that. The Nate and TD Show is here. We'll be right back.
blood test, yo. Select the wrong department. And just pulled up your dress. Style molest that. Canal.
All right, back from the break. I had to get a little woo in there, you know what I'm saying? It's yours. And that's something. That's right. And that's something that, you know, this training camp, you know, a lot of guys are out there saying is mine. And that is mine is a spot on the roster. I mean, there's competition. And I wanted to talk to you specifically about that because you climbed the ladder as an undrafted free agent and you got a spot on a roster and became a marquee player. So when you look at this season, right, with training camp and not having preseason games, I mean, how would you approach it if you were a player?
Well, it's kind of different. You know, with no preseason games, you know, practice is preseason game. You know, to be honest with you, my mentality as a incoming rookie in practice at that time with having preseason games was able to go into practice a little more relaxed, you know, knowing that I was going to make mistakes, but just wanting to run full speed. You know, my receivers coach at the time actually was Coach Bruce Arians. And one thing he used to always tell me was, listen, I don't care if you run the wrong route. I want you running 100 miles an hour. And, you know, that's what I would go out there and focus on in practice. And if there was a mistake, I would address it. But now you're facing a situation where you got to go to practice and you got to be prepared and on point because – at the very moment you're creating more than one mistake, you're in the wrong position, these notes are being taken down as, okay, he's not ready to be on this team, instead of, well, let's just see how he does when he gets to the preseason games. And unfortunately, you know, it goes from having one maximum effort maybe a week to now acknowledging and looking at it like, okay, well, there is no holding back in practice. There is no mistakes. There is no room for error. I have to go into practice clear and decisive about what I must accomplish, what my job is, and understanding this offense, defense, or whatever it is that they're asking me to do, because I have to accomplish that here in practice and show them here on practice tape because I won't have a preseason game. I think it's a good thing, though, kind of, but it can definitely be dangerous, you know, because I've definitely seen some guys that are able to perform well in practice and not so much in games, and actually vice versa. So it's definitely going to take a great front office and an intelligent coaching staff to be able to find these guys' talent and abilities to fit this team.
And it's interesting because you're seeing the roster being shuffled a bit, right? Cole McDonald was released. Trevor Siemian was added. They were having trouble figuring out what they were going to do at running back behind Darrington Evans, obviously, and Derrick Henry, right? Kari Blasingame was getting carries, but they said, you know what? We might need to look at adding another running back. So they went out and signed Jeremy McNichols. If you were in that situation, right, and you see, like, it's a running back, you see all this stuff happening, how would you respond to that?
Man, in the wise words of Coach Sean Jefferson, man, you got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. Mm-hmm. You'll never know what's going to happen. You know, it's just one of those things. Like I said, you are placed in a situation now. They're in a situation now where, as you stated, in the slightest moment that coaching staff sees or notices that they may need a different piece, you may be that guy out of there. Or you may be that guy fighting for the position to stay around there, and they're debating on which one of the two guys they may switch in or out. And being the lower guy on the totem pole, being the undrafted free agent rookies, and being a guy that may not be your premier starter, you know, you just have to definitely be on call for every single situation. You have to be prepared to step up when other guys aren't stepping up. I'll never forget, you know, my rookie year, you know, even on special teams, you know, there will be positions that I know I couldn't play, but a guy may not be paying attention to special teams practice while we out on the field or something like that. They'd call for the guy, and I would try to run out there. And they'd be like, Nate, get out of here. And I'd be like, you know, just showing them that my effort and my want to was there. You know, yeah. It wasn't ever going to be a time that they were going to need a body and I wasn't going to step up. So you just have to be that guy if you're in the lower guy part of the totem pole. You know, a lot of the, you know, premier guys are going to be taken care of in this time. So if you're a lower guy, you have to be able and ready to step up at any given time. I don't care if you're a receiver and they looking for a DB. hey, put me out there. Mm-hmm. And he said, the great saying of the NFL teams go, the more you can do. The more you can do, the longer you last. And that's the way these guys have to address it.
It's crazy you mention that, because that's exactly what Mike Vrabel said earlier this week when he was asked about Kyrie Blossom game. Vanderbilt's on Kyrie Blossom game. And he dropped the versatility word, that code word right there. And just like you said, the more you could do. Kyrie Blossom game is a guy, as I mentioned earlier, he could take carries out of the backfield as a running back. He could play fullback. He gives you special teams. He is a option out of the backfield. So that's a good example of the more you could do and how much that will further put a stronghold on your roster spot. Now for you, right, rookie year, let's go back to, what was that, 2005, I want to say?
2005, a long age ago, man,
almost half your life ago, but it's all good. Let's go back to that. And when you look at that experience in camp, was there a particular point where you saw things just start turning around and you say, you know what, I really do. You always believe you got a shot to make the roster. But was there a point where you said, you know what, I'm on this roster, man. I got a spot.
Well, it had became like, you know, after the first couple preseason games and everybody's still around and then they make that first cut, you know, you start seeing some of the guys that may have been your peers. You know, obviously you're going to find yourself grouping and finding guys that you can relate to, and being a younger guy, you're going to be obviously hanging with a lot of younger guys, and starting to see a lot of those guys leave and I was still around started, you know, making my eyes kind of perk up a little bit. You know, we had drafted a guy in the fourth round that year named Fred Gibson from Georgia.
I remember
him. You know, obviously with him being the draft pick, fourth round draft pick, it was, in my mind, it was, you know, well, they're going to keep him. You know, they're going to make sure that he has a roster spot. So just find a way that you could fit in. And I think it was around the fourth preseason game I got in, and they were feeding me. They were feeding me. They were trying to make sure that I got the ball in my hands. And it kind of was like, okay, well, maybe this is them trying to see if I'm going to really be consistent about what I have going on. My route running was, you know, okay. I had my speed there, and I was able to make a couple plays. So I just wanted to be consistent. And I felt like it was the fourth preseason game. You know, I had an opportunity to make some plays. I made some. And when I looked up, you know, a lot of the coaches, you know, were giving me the credit to say, you know, continue to get better. And I think it may, the number one key point may have been when Coach Cower himself got on me for missing a block. And I was like, hold on. Like, this ain't just normal. It was like fourth quarter too, you know. So I felt like they were watching me. And I felt like that at that time that they were telling me, like, listen, we watching you for a reason. Let's see what you can do. So it was around the fourth preseason game for me.
And this is the thing, because I remember when the whole issue of whether or not they were going to have the preseason was being tossed back and forth. And people were like, oh, well, what's the importance of a preseason? No, nobody needs that. And look what happened. Look what happened. A guy who ended up contributing to a Super Bowl season, a Super Bowl winning season for the Steelers, and then came here to Nashville, folks, and was a major part of the passing game here. That probably wouldn't have happened if he didn't have a fourth preseason game. So think about that.
Definitely would.
Before you say, hey, who needs the preseason? I'll tell you who needs the preseason. You as fans, because without that, you wouldn't have a Nate Washington. Without that, you wouldn't have an Adam Humphries on the team now. That wouldn't be there. So think twice before you say that.
Definitely. I think it's, like you said, TD, it's important to have those preseason games. You know, obviously, you're going to have your premier guys. You're going to have your A.J. Browns. You're going to have your Derrick Henrys. You're going to have your Kevin Byers. You're going to have your top-name guys that you're not going to necessarily need to look at like that. We get it, you know, but this is an opportunity for your unsung heroes, your Adam Humphries, like you said, and those guys to come in and show that they can be an impact on the team and give you a boost towards gaining what you want most, a Lombardi.
That's it right there. That's what it boils down to. And another great example, Terrell Davis, right? They're playing in Japan. He runs down the field, and he wallops, I want to say, Tyrone Drakeford for the 49ers, who was receiving a punt, he wallops him. And next thing you know, hey, 30, get in there and take a rep. And then what happens? He becomes one of the best running backs in the game during his period. So it's really just a matter of opportunity. And for me, like when I look at it and when I watch you guys, I say to myself, I say, everybody out there is talented. You know, it's just a matter of getting that opportunity. And that's what's so important about having these preseason games. I mean, it's something that, you know, the guys now, like this year, it's the opportunities are more limited. So when you look at that and you hear some of these coaches say, okay, we have to draw up scrimmages. We have to figure out ways to have more live periods. How would you have handled having those more live periods?
Man, TD, I'm not going to lie. Live periods in practice are tough, man, because there's no refs. You know, unless they have the refs come out there, it can be difficult. You know, you get a lot of guys that just play the tough role, and they just go out there just to be bullies. You know, forget the rules of the game. I just want to go out here and beat somebody up today. You know, and you get away from the football aspect, and it's difficult to showcase your talent when you out there just fighting with a guy every rep, you know. But at the same time, you know, it's a requirement. You know, it's only the strong gonna survive in these situations, and you're gonna find out who's really there to play ball or who's really there just to look good. You know, I think this is going to be a positive to make sure that guys are coming in the facilities and making sure that they're not just looking at the day like, all right, well, let me just get through practice. So every single day should be addressed like a game day in these type of situations. Every single day, you have to get better. Every single day, you have to make sure that whatever mistake that you made the previous day is corrected. You know, whatever displacement that you may have had the previous day, you're in the right place. These things are going to be critical not only to starting off a season correctly, but making sure that you're sustaining a season in the right direction and having the foundation now that you should, because you're not going to get it from playing against other teams in preseason games.
Yeah, and that's so crucial. That's so crucial. And the tempo, the intensity, all that is turned up even more because those opportunities are limited. So what does it lead to? Maximizing reps. And that's something that you touched on earlier when we started this conversation, and it's huge. So when you guys see some of these videos that we post, guys and girls, by the way, you see some of these videos that we post right from practice, and we're going to get into a couple of those videos in the next segment. But when you see those, understand, these guys are literally out there fighting for their job. And that's why you're seeing them go all out the way they do. And I think that leads us into a perfect situation that we're seeing on two opposite sides of the ball. We're going to get into that on the next side of the break. Nate and TD, we will be right back. Come on. There you go. That red man back from the break. Nate and TD. I hope you guys and girls appreciate the bumps. I always like to get my old school hip hop in there. I'm a big red man fan, big Wu-Tang, Mobb Deep. You're going to hear all that. Nate's going to get his music in too. We're going to get all that going. But as we talked about in the last segment, these videos that we're posting on Twitter and Instagram for you to watch, it's always good to be able to get a pro perspective. And one of the things that I keep noticing, like when I post certain videos, I get a message from Nate, and he's getting into some of the things that really stand out that the naked eye probably wouldn't see. So let's get right into these low red zone one-on-ones. And first and foremost, let's talk a little bit about how things change when you go into that low red zone. How much is different as a wide receiver?
Well, you know, in an open field, the best way I can explain it is, you know, especially when you're dealing with a guy with speed, it's easy for him just to run away from a guy a lot of times. There's so much space out there that even late timing throws, anything like that, they may be successful because of the space. Well, the low red zone, you don't have that space. You don't have the time. You don't have the opportunities that you would have. You know, there's obviously little to no area to run in, so you have to be decisive, quick, and even your quarterback has to know exactly where he should be going with the ball, sometimes pre-snap. You can't even wait till after the ball is snapped, because a lot of these defenses, they may disguise and give you a look initially that may not be the final look that they drop in. You know, they may give you a zone look and end up being in man-to-man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here it is, you're looking at a guy running and you're thinking that he's going to be open, but he's got a guy connected to him the whole time. And a lot of the things that, you know, that I was seeing and was mentioning, you know, as you stated with the videos that you were mentioning, is just the small details that I was seeing and some of the things that they were doing. Some of the things they were doing great. I've seen some great releases. I've seen some great top of the routes in the back of the end zone that were impressive to me. But, you know, it's just continuing to try to work the small nuances of, the, as you stated, what the normal average eye wouldn't see. You know, and some of those things are being decisive quickly, making sure that you're getting in an area or in a spot that can defeat your defender right now, because the most important thing in the low red zone is you have to be quick and decisive. You cannot go up and have time to chop or pitter-patter around, because obviously a lot of the times the defender is just going to already be squatting on you anyway. He doesn't have to back up.
Right.
There is no space behind him to cover in that notion. So a lot of the times when I say squatting, they're just sitting there on you. They're not going to move. They're waiting for you to make your final move so they can pounce on you. And in those moments, you have to take advantage of them stalling their feet and be able to break away from them quick enough to get a quick pass to make sure you're getting seven.
And you spent time with the Bucks, right, working with receivers. So
yeah.
This is not only coming from a been there, done that perspective as a player, it's coming from a been there perspective as a coach. That being said,
right, exactly.
I want to look at two different situations, right? And let's say, you know, it's they're showing you. Let's say they're showing you a cover zero, straight up man, and the blitz. You know the blitz is coming, right? And it's
right.
Team low red zone 1-on-1s. You run to the right side. The ball's on the left hash. The corner lines up on you. It's press. He lines up on you, but he's just slightly inside, right, over top of your left shoulder because, again, you're on the right side.
Right.
How do you – and you have to run a slant, of course. How do you do that?
Right. I mean, well, first of all, initially the first key point for a receiver is I'm thinking I want to try to square him up. I want to try to get head up with him, meaning if he's sitting on my inside at the snap of the ball, I think I want to try to – move my left foot somehow to try to square up with him. Now, in that point that I can't, a lot of great DBs are getting paid too. I used to tell a lot of my coaches, hey, man, he getting paid too. So a lot of guys may step inside, you know, but in those very moments, this is where the reaction drills come into play. You know, you can't, coaches say all the time when you go to the line as a receiver and you're facing press, go to the line with the plan. You have to have a plan. And in those plans, you have to also be able to react in a split second that you can counteract whatever it is that defender is trying to do to defend you. If my DB is sitting inside on me, I'm going to jab him hard inside and make him take another inside step to sail an outside fade to him. So now when I sail this outside fade and he overplays thinking that he's going to get beat, now I can slip under him and run my slant because he's being aggressive, trying to catch up to the one and only route that can beat him sitting inside, a back shoulder fade or an over-the-top fade. You have to be able to sail another route. It's like they always say, it's chess, not checkers. You have to be able to sail another route and make another route look like what you're about to run in a different manner. Deception is everything. I think one of the great receivers of time that was able to do this, not fast, not big, not quick, but Marvin Harrison was a great guy with doing those type of things. He'll make his slants look like fades. He'll make his fades look like slants. And it never mattered if he was fast or not. Being able to accomplish that is going to get a DB to overplay, and that's when you kind of play him, CD, to be honest.
Now, in those, and I know it's limited, right, because we're talking probably a total of like 3 minutes of video, but – who are some of the guys that have stood out for you when you're looking at these low red zone 1-on-1s?
Well, as I look at AJ, I think that's just a timing thing with him and Ryan. I've always been impressed with AJ's larger size and being able to run routes. You know, you don't get too many guys with that size that are still capable of running routes. he's been doing a good job. But as I stated, you know, on my social media, man, this kid, Khalif Raymond,
yes.
I'm looking for some big things from him this year. I think he has the capability to not only to make big plays, but also to be a great route runner. I've seen some things from him. I want him to get into more playmaker mode of stop running the route like it may look on paper, because I think he has the ability to still be in area or on time with whatever it is with his natural route running ability instead of doing exactly what's on paper. If he can get creative and do those things, I think sky's the limit for him. I think this offensive receiving core is definitely put together good. You have obviously a seasoned vet now. It's funny kind of to say that. I remember drafting the kid, but Corey Davis is coming back. I'm looking for some big things from Adam. I think this is a group of guys that have matched well with AJ being the leader. It's going to be interesting, though. You know, I'm going to see how they're going to be able to play off our run game. But I'm definitely looking for some big things from Khalif Raymond, man. I think sky's the limit with him.
And in watching those, like, you're seeing some of the corners start to be more physical. And I actually talked about that on Talking with TD. That really, it stood out to me, right? You see Malcolm Butler. You see Adoree Jackson being physical. How about that? Yeah. And then you see Christian Fulton, the rookie. So when you hear Rob Moore, the receiver coach, talk about how Anthony Midgett working with these guys and that physicality is helping the receivers, let the listeners know how that actually does help you guys get ready for what you're going to see on game day.
Well, I think a lot of guys need that physical interaction because, obviously, you know, you're not going to go as hard in practice when it comes to live action. You're going to have your times where you're going to tackle into the ground. But even still, you want to take care of your teammate. So even in you making the team and a lot of big hits may be going on and physicality may be occurring, it's not going to be the same as when the official game comes. Mm-hmm. So in those slightest moments where DBs are being physical with receivers, it gives everybody an opportunity to go out and be better prepared for what they're going to encounter on that game day. And I think a lot of the, especially with receivers, you know, we don't want to be touched, man. We out there, we want to be pretty. We want to be cute.
Yep.
You know, we want our route to be crisp. You know what I'm saying? But
yes.
A lot of times we must understand that the physicality nature of running down the field is going to happen in a game as a where it may not happen in practice. So to endure those things in practice, to have those things, you know, happen to you, is going to give those guys or everybody, you know, a better opportunity to go out and be prepared for Sunday when it does come around.
And real quick before we hit the break, thinking back on your time, you mentioned Bruce Arians as a guy you worked with. You played, you know, alongside Santonio Holmes, Hines Ward. Who would you say, you know, was the veteran that helped you the most understand how practice, you know, was going to lead to games? And just – Who was the biggest influence on your being able to, you know, excel in the league?
Well, it was probably Hines. You know, being a younger guy and watching a future Hall of Famer go through meetings, go through workout sessions, go through, you know, his dieting, go through, you know, even his off-the-field care from massages to, you know, making sure that his hands were together, all those things that he did to prepare himself for not only the seasons but Sundays was definitely influential on how I carried my professional career. It was something I think a lot of guys, you know, especially when you're dealing with Division I guys, they kind of get an understanding, you know, from the systems they're coming from. But me being a guy, obviously, that had no clue of what I was getting myself into, you know, those guys kind of took me under their wing and showed me what a true professional was about. I think Hines did everything he could to make sure my small butt was in that weight room with him. But, you know, I was just out there for my speed, man. But eventually, you know, when I got to Tennessee, I seen what, you know, the impact that the weight room had in me. And even then, you know, just his voice ringing in my head, making sure that my body was fully prepared, influenced me to go make sure that I was getting in the weight room and being a vocal leader in the meeting rooms and doing everything I could to make sure that my leadership was coming along.
That's dope. So we're going to end it on a little bit of Steelers conversation. Guess what? We're going to go to a break and come back and pick up on this Steelers conversation because I want to talk about playing as a team. We'll be right back. Nate and TD.
Yes!
the rebel. All right. Public Enemy.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, let me tell you something. You go back to 1990, 1989 when that came out. Boy, a smooth, slim TD was right up in the attic shadow boxing for days.
Yeah.
that whole tape, man. That right there brings that energy. So
motivation.
Exactly. So we ended talking about the Steelers last segment. I want to get back into that because I think it leads into something that we're going to talk about in a bit. And that's just when you were in Pittsburgh, 2005, you were a rookie, right? And you had a veteran on the team in Jerome Bettis. And I told you on the break, you know, Bear Brooks, my guy that I was with in Philly, he would always say that the mindset was win one for Bussy. So that team mindset, right, and wanting to do something for another guy, what was that like to be a part of that? Because you guys ended up doing it.
Well, it was kind of crazy for me personally. The reason for the win one for Bussy was, you know, the previous year they went 13-3 and disappointingly got put out of the playoffs. So as I'm incoming as a rookie free agent, undrafted free agent, my focus instantly turns from trying to make this team to now I see the focus is everybody wants to get back to these playoffs to win one for Bussy. The crazy thing about it is my first encounter with the very first player after I was told that I made the team was Jerome Bettis. I walked downstairs in the locker room, and he caught me coming around a corner and put me in a headlock and gave me a long dissertation about him being from Detroit, me being from Toledo, and basically just making sure that I had a career and not just a job for the year. And he took me under his wing ever since. But Bussy was that type of guy for every guy on that roster. I to this day, you know, Joey Porter calls him Big Brother. You know, so for me coming in and seeing this family draw to the Big Brother and say that, look, this is what this guy deserves. Not only does this guy deserve that, but we know this is what we're capable of. We left it out there on the field last season, but this season we're coming back with vengeance to let everybody know that it was not a fluke and we deserve to win the Super Bowl. And Bussy, obviously, being from Detroit, the Super Bowl being in Detroit, him being our big brother, that was just, you know, our warrior call. It was to make sure that everybody was on point and know that our potential was there to be placed and to make sure that we weren't complacent on what we may have going on game in, game out. We knew what we wanted out of that season, and it was a Lombardi. And if it was going to be Bussy to Kara is there, then that's what we were going to do.
And it's crazy that obviously it's everyone's goal to win the Super Bowl, but it's crazy that, you know, having it take place in Detroit, in Bettis' hometown, knowing that it was probably going to be his last, possibly going to be his last season, ended up being, that was just an added motivation. So what that tells me is that you guys individually felt that you wanted to do something for someone else, not just yourself. And that leads us right into a segment that we're going to do each and every week. I mean, you know, we got to put some sauce on it. You know what I'm saying? So we're gonna do this segment, and this is something where it's not always lollipops and butterflies. We have to, you know, balance it out. Elijah, let me get that music, please.
Things that make you ooh.
Things that make you go ooh.
That's right.
Things that make you ooh.
Every week, we are going to call something out. We're going to identify something that makes us go, This week, well, from last week, the thing that makes me go home, and I know it makes you go home, is the news with Isaiah Wilson's situation. And obviously it's something the Titans have, you know, tried to patch up and move on from, but I haven't gotten to talk to you about that. And when you see a guy, you know, and he's young. Look, he's 21 years old. You're not going to think about big picture. He was at a gathering at TCU, and, you know, in the midst of this pandemic, I don't know that that's really the most intelligent thing to do. So that's what makes me go, So as a guy who has been in that locker room and knows that it's bigger than one person, how do you look at what happened with him?
Well, I'll say this, you know, once again, like, I reflect on this situation as phases of life. You know, you got, and I spoke to this about plenty of people that have asked me and inquiries about what was going to happen with this football season. But the reality of it is you got young guys that are making a lot of money that, you know, want to play football. But the reality of it is there is no more class. There is no more going to school. There is no more doing any of those things. These guys have been waiting to get in the NFL all of their lives. They're going to get on Sundays, and they're going to play good, and they're going to get a big win, and they're going to come out of the situation, and they're going to get pats on the back. And after the game, they're going to want to find parties and gatherings and those type of things. The leaders in that locker room, the veterans, the older guys, are going to have to make sure that the young guys know that now is not the time. Now is not the time for that, because if you're doing those, the things that you're going to jeopardize now is going to sacrifice the ultimate opportunity, which is football. You know, and I look at a lot of these young guys. It makes me go, but it also puts me in their shoes of being there and knowing, you know, just being young, having the opportunity to go support and take care of your friends, do what you want to on your time after you're done with work. You know, these guys aren't thinking about, oh, well, let me, and it's unfortunate, but they're not, you know, and that's just the reality of it. So it's going to take the veterans that in that locker room and the leaders in that locker room that understand, you know, that now is not the time to make sure that it's coming from them, not the coaches, not the backlash of social media or fans that may get on them about it, because honestly, it may go through one ear and not the other. These guys are going to feel like, you know, they're adults now, you know, and they may know a lot about what's going on and, oh, I wasn't just doing this or doing that. But the reality of it is, you know, mom and dad may be coaches and front office people may come speak to that player. But when big brother, that teammate, comes speak to you and say, look, man, I get it. You know what I'm saying? You just wanted to go maybe hang out with a couple friends. But listen, though, now is not the time. That's when things are going to start being understood by those younger guys more. And I think it's going to be necessary for their interaction to happen like that in order for control to be over any team at this time and during this pandemic.
There you have it, folks. Wise words being spoken. And this is what you're going to get each and every week from the Nate and TD show right here on 102.5 The Game. That's the first episode, first edition. Many more to come. Nate, my guy, I appreciate it. Definitely a great opportunity for me to be on here with you, and let's go.
Hey, TD, man, I've been waiting on this for quite some time, man. I am excited about this opportunity with you as well, brother. And you know we about to turn this thing up, man. The people know what they about to get from us, and I'm excited.